In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to hour number two of the program for Friday, April 30th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Of course, Friday at 2 means it's time for the Federal News Countdown, and every Friday at 2, we count down the news stories that two federal experts think are the most important federal news stories of the week. My experts this week, Alan Chvotkin of the Professional Services Council. Alan, great to have you back on the countdown.
Pleasure to be here.
This is a return engagement for you. So,
anytime.
You didn't mess it up bad enough the first time that I hesitated to have you back, right? That's the way you should look at it.
That's the way I look at it.
Okay, fantastic. And here for his first time on the countdown, so the pressure is on, John, is John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service. It's great to have you in the studio as well. You're, of course, a regular contributor to the Federal Drive, on with them every week and talking about issues that are of import to people who work in the government. So it's great to have you on with us.
Oh, Francis, always a delight to be with you.
I appreciate that. We have a lot of good stories to cover, and so we will dispense with my typical inanity and get right on with it.
Number three.
The third most important story of the week on the Federal News Countdown, according to Alan Chvotkin, is an analysis from GovExec under the headline, "A Hiring Rule Would Limit Contractors." And you have a little bit of knowledge about the person who wrote this, Alan. It's someone that you're at least familiar with, right?
I've got to plead a little guilty knowledge on that one. It's an editorial that PSC President and CEO Stan Soloway put in GovExec about a Labor Department rule that was issued in March 19th on implementing a presidential executive order on non-displacement of federal workers, non-displacement of workers. This rule, good faith effort to implement the executive order, but in our view, went very, very far and actually ends up restricting the ability of companies to put the team on the field to respond to government business the way they think best. It is an effort at it's a right of first refusal for companies from the predecessor contract to be hired by the successor contractor. Very unusual that we would have that situation in the government contracts world, and the analysis here lays out some of the big challenges that the Labor Department rule puts on the table.
What would you like to see come out of this?
Well, there's more flexibility in the executive order than has been carried over in the Labor Department rule. There's a lot of confusion and terms in here that have to be carefully worked out. And then there's acquisition regulations which are yet to come. Those will also provide some guidance to the government contracting officer and to the contractors on how this would work. So a lot of flexibility. We'll submit comments in the middle of May on this rule. They're going to be very long. They're going to be hopefully they'll be thoughtful. And we think that the rule should restore a lot of the flexibility that the executive order provides for.
There's a lot of meat here, and I've got it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, of course, so people can read the whole thing. But there's one paragraph I wanted to just maybe you could expand on a little bit more. The rule presumes fault and responsibility for performance rests with management, not with the employees working on the contract. And despite a team's performance history, it assumes excellence can be achieved by fielding the same players. And that really gets to the heart of what you're talking about. Right.
That's exactly right. We certainly don't suggest that anyone is exclusively at fault, or that either management or the employees performing on work are to be blamed. But by the same token, you can't ignore the fact that the contractor, the predecessor contractor, lost the work to somebody else, and there was a reason for that.
Mm-hmm. Alan Schvatkin's story number three is an analysis piece by Stan Soloway, his colleague on GovExec. The headline, "Hiring Rule Would Limit Contractors," and as I mentioned, it's linked up at federalnewsradio.com. John Palguda, your story number three this week is from the Washington Post. Joe Davidson's headline, "Bill Would Require More Training for Government Supervisors." And in the current budget times that we're in, the complaint usually is that training is one of the things that gets cut first, and this bill would hopefully take care of that issue.
Absolutely, Francis. And first of all, Joe wrote the article in anticipation of a hearing that was held yesterday, which I testified along with several others, before the Senate Subcommittee on Oversight of Government Management and the Federal Workforce in D.C., and the purpose of the hearing was to talk about the need for training for managers. And we had somebody from defense and OPM. We had our two largest federal unions represented, NTU, AFGE, myself, and actually somebody from Procter & Gamble. Not surprisingly, there, you know, we quickly reached consensus that training for managers and supervisors is not a bad thing.
Go figure.
And in fact, the Office of Personnel Management, some folks out there will know, issued regulations, at the end of, last year in December that mandated, training for new supervisors in the first year and follow up in the third year. What Senator, Akaka wanted to do, and I think it will be successful, in terms of getting it passed, is put into statute, put into law, this requirement, and actually assign a little accountability as well in terms of reports to OPM and oversight by OPM. And, of course, once it's in law, then there's a more of an incentive to actually fund the training. So that was all well and good. There was a little follow-up, which Joe Davidson of the Washington Post wrote about today, and that is we spent a good deal of conversation in the hearing about something called the Federal Career Intern Program, because the hearing was ostensibly about training and internships and so on. So this was teed up, and the two union representatives, Colleen Kelly from NTU and David Cox from AFGE, spent most of their testimony talking about issues they have with the Federal Career Intern Program. And you know, this is the kind of stuff only HR wonks, you know, typically love. But the thing to know about that is that about one out of every five new employees are now being hired through the Federal Career Intern Program.
Wow.
It's not an internship, as normally thought.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hiring authority put into place by executive order in 2005, Bill Clinton. And it gives the agencies, in summary, the ability to go out and target recruiting. You don't have to post the job, you know, to the world. You can say, I'm going out to these 18 colleges, or I'm going out to these veteran service centers, and that's going to be my area of competition.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just tee this up for this conversation as, you know, keep your eye on this space, because there's going to be a lot of dialogue. The unions would like to have the executive order withdrawn.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us who are looking at it from a management, good HR perspective, think it's actually quite a useful authority,
mm-hmm.
should be retained.
Yeah.
So we'll see where we go from here.
What does it mean to you, if anything, that President Obama, who was elected with the help of a lot of labor support, has done a number of things in the personnel area that are directly contradictory to things that labor unions support, like Director Barry saying we want to get rid of the GS schedule and base pay on performance, maybe not pay for performance, in quotes, as it's been. Director Barry saying at IRMCO, I played it on the show a couple of weeks ago, or not at IRMCO, but at another event, I've got 900 presidential managerial interns ready to go, and if you hire all those, I'll give you 1,800 next year and 4,000 the year after that. Again, really exactly the opposite of what some of the biggest federal labor unions are in favor of.
Good observation, Francis, and I would suggest that this is not a situation at all where the administration or certainly John Barry are in opposition to the unions. And in fact, you will find they may be a little less vocal, but you will find some of the management groups take issue
mm-hmm.
with some of the directives. I think what, and I'm I'll tell you, I'm a John Barry fan.
I don't know of anybody that isn't so far.
The guy is, you know, he's got a tremendous energy and he's trying to do the right thing, and that's the nub of the issue here. When, as an old HR guy myself, 34 years in government, when you're trying to figure out what makes the most sense in terms of management of the organization, management of the workforce, and you follow that path, you're going to have folks all over on either side of any path you take saying, well, wait a minute, I like my path a little bit better because it, you know, it meets some concerns or some needs that I have. I think what John Barry, I think what the president's trying to do is say, well, let's figure out what's best for the American public,
mm-hmm.
what's best for the operation of government, and let's pursue that. And if you've got concerns, let me know. And, of course, they're hearing lots.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of concerns. But I have to say, I haven't seen any sort of a, certainly an anti-union animus, nor an anti-management animus. I think they're just trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to portray it as such. I just find it interesting that there are a number of things that he's done, and both at the presidential level and at Director Barry's level, that seem to be nobody can say that they're giving the unions everything they want and you know, bowing down to them as was suspected before the election.
That is correct. And nor are they giving managers or agency HR folks everything they want because, as we'll talk about in one of our other stories, there's on hiring reform, I think there's some management concerns.
All right. John Palguta, story number three on the Federal News Countdown this week. Bill would give more training for government supervisors from Joe Davidson in the Washington Post yesterday on the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And we'll put today's story up as a bonus for you there, John. So that will be available, too, for people that are following along. The Federal News Countdown is up to story number two from John Palguta of the Partnership for Public Service and Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council. And we'll check into story number two when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma, one of the great stars of classical music, enthralls audiences all over the world with his passion and artistry. When it comes to picking a cello, he tends toward Italian instruments made in the 18th century. When it comes to a timepiece, however, he favors an instrument crafted in Switzerland, the Rolex Datejust. Since Rolex introduced the first self-winding calendar wristwatch in 1945, the Datejust has become one of the most sought-after models in the Oyster line. With its classic Oyster design and magnified date window, the Datejust is every bit as distinctive as the master cellist who wears it. To see the Datejust and a complete selection of other Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorbeck. Here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Daily Debrief. You know about DARPA, of course, DOD's research arm. But have you heard of ARPA-E, the new Energy Department organization that's tasked with energy innovation? And we'll talk to the head of ARPA-E. And can online government tools change how people perceive you? A new Pew Research poll has some interesting findings. We'll get details. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorbeck and Amy Morris, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown for Friday, April 30th. We're counting down the top three most important federal news stories of the week, as chosen by Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council and John Palguta of the Partnership for Public Service. And we're up to
number two.
The second most important news story of the week, according to Alan Shvatkin, is from Defense Daily, and the headline is, Defense Industry Scouring Proposed DOD Conflict of Interest Rule. And this is one I have to confess. I dug into this when it came out, and it didn't penetrate the old noggin. So I'm glad to have an expert like you to explain this one to me, Alan.
I'll give it a shot. All right. last May, Congress passed the Weapons Systems Acquisition Reform Act. This was the last great effort at reforming how the Defense Department buys major weapon systems. And as part of that, there has been a legitimate concern about issues called organizational conflict of interest. That is, are people who are providing support to the Defense Department in any potential conflict for the advice that they may give for the weapon systems that the Defense Department is to purchase? And while the Congress had a lot of different approaches, they settled on pushing the issue to the Defense Department and asking them to develop some proposed regulations. There's some regulations around conflicts of interest for companies who are providing support to major weapon systems. So now almost a year later, back in April 22nd, the Defense Department issued a proposed rule on this organizational conflict of interest, not covering only major weapon systems, but covering all procurements in the Defense Department, except for a very small segment called commercial off-the-shelf procurement. And so the rule is really market affecting, and the reason I think the Defense Daily article was important and why this rule is important is because it directly affects the marketplace of companies who are able to compete today or in the future for business with the Defense Department. Mm-hmm. This risk of conflict of interest. Now, the department is absolutely right to be worried about it. The industry is worried about conflicts of interest. Although I sometimes joke that your position on this conflict of interest rule, where you stand is where you sit.
Uh-huh.
We know that in the past some companies have chosen to divest business units because of that potential conflict. That was what Northrop Grumman did last year when they spun off TASC. Other companies have said, these are core business units, and why should I have to choose between my children? I love them both, and why can't we coexist?
Yeah.
So this rule is important. It is a proposed rule. Comments are due. We've been holding a lot of meetings to talk about it. We've got a lot more to come, but it deserves some really careful analysis by the companies, by the agencies. It puts a significant responsibility on both government and on industry to get it right. And so that's why I thought that this was the second most important story.
All right. Conflict of interest, John, is something that has been difficult for the government for many years at all levels, whether it's agency level, personal level, everywhere. What do you see when you read this story? What do you see as an HR guy might be the implications for this?
Well, you know, within the federal workforce, you always have the issue of, okay, how do you take a well-intended law rule and translate that to the workers in terms of a set of operating policies and guidelines, and since nobody carries around the code of federal regulations and the ethics guides, you also have to figure out a way, how do you make this meaningful to people so mm-hmm. that it becomes part of the culture and the value in a reasonable, rational way, so you don't have folks overreacting. And in the same way, you don't have folks ignoring it because they can't quite figure out, well, how's that relevant to me?
Yeah.
So I look at it and I'm thinking, wow, that, you know, there's some real implementation issues that could come out of that in terms of how it gets translated to the workforce and what folks are told to do as a result of any new law or guidance.
What should we be watching for on this, Alan?
Well, there'll be a couple of things. The next major event is going to be the response to the public to the questions, the response to the comments, which are due in the middle of June. But I think you'll also see companies beginning to internalize these proposed rules, making some judgments to whether they're going to be put into place in this form, and starting to see strategies around individual procurement activities, as well as whether they should acquire, merge, divest some other business units. I know many companies are looking at that right now.
Defense Daily is the home of Alan Shvatkin's second most important story of the week on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The headline is Defense Industry Scouring Proposed DOD Conflict of Interest Rule. We still have story number two from John Palguda to dig into, and we will do that next on the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose.
In NBC News Radio, I'm Pete Williams. President Obama says his administration will not go forward with any new offshore drilling permits until the cause of the massive oil leak in the Gulf is known. And he wants to make sure that current and future drilling rigs have systems to prevent the kind of disaster now spreading in the Gulf.
And we're going to make sure that any leases going forward have those safeguards. We've also dispatched teams to the Gulf to inspect all deep water rigs to address safety concerns.
In the frantic effort to protect the Gulf Coast, 1,900 federal response workers are now on the job. The oil came ashore first in Louisiana. The National Weather Service predicts that the high winds, high tides, and wave action could push oil deep into the inlets, ponds, and lakes that line the state's southeast through the weekend. The government reports a third consecutive quarter of growth in the nation's economy. This is the strongest sign, economists say, that a sustainable recovery now may be taking hold nationwide. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Pete Williams, NBC News Radio.
This is the sound of a TV. When it's turned off. Because the whole family's in the backyard having fun. When you spend less to get your yard ready at Walmart, you could have more of that. It's rollback time at Walmart. Now you can get Scott's Turf Builder, Pennington Grass Seed, and Spectracide Bug Killer for less. You can also save on a Brute Mower by Briggs & Stratton and a Poulon Pro Trimmer. That sounds good to me. Save money, live better. Walmart.
Absolutely everything is on sale now through Saturday at the JCPenney biggest sale of the season. Everything, no exclusions. Save big on all brands for her, for him, for kids, all shoes and bras, all home items and kitchen electrics, all jewelry, watches, and more. Plus $10 off when you spend $50 with JCPenney Instant Money. Go to jcp.com to see everything on sale. New look, new day, who knew? JCPenney. Sephora stores inside JCPenney not participating. Offers end May 1st.
Checking your daily TSP ticker. The latest numbers from April 29th, 2010. The G Fund gains 0.01 at $13.26. The F Fund up 0.03 at $13.68. The C Fund picks up 0.19 at $14.39. The S Fund gains 0.36 at $19.40. The I Fund rises 0.18 at $18.32. Your L Funds make money. The 2040 up 0.18 at $16.67. The 2030 rises 0.16 at $16.37. The 2020 moves up 0.13 at $16.07. A rise of 0.05 for the 2010 at $15.62. And the L Income picks up 0.04 at $14.20. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Save money at halfpricedc.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more. This week, halfpricedc.com has half-price gift certificates to O'Donnell's Sea Grill, the Washington, D.C. area's premier seafood restaurant, Indigo Blue Massage and Wellness in Vienna. Become a member and you get one free massage every month. And Clarendon Fitness Collective in Arlington, a team of fitness professionals working for you. See all the offers at halfpricedc.com.
You wouldn't drive your kids in the car without them wearing their seatbelts, so why would you leave them unprotected once you're gone? At Zelle Law, we help protect your assets for your heirs and provide the latest techniques designed to maximize your wealth. To learn more, call 571-203-9355 or visit us on the web at zellelaw.com. You can also join me, Wayne Zell, every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth right here on Federal News Radio.
What are the latest strategies for meeting the OMB directive for data center consolidation? Join leading experts from government and industry as they explore the best in consolidation and how to chart a practical roadmap to OMB compliance at the GTSI Technology Leadership Series, May 12th at the Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C. Attend and receive a free copy of their new federal IT survey on virtualization. To register, visit gtsi.com/TLS. GTSI, one mission. Yours.
Plane's fueled. Are we good to go?
Yeah, I think we're good.
Baggage?
Empty crate. A plane ready for takeoff.
Guys, we got an empty dog carrier here.
And your moment of truth.
We need all eyes on a missing dog now.
Which push-to-talk network do you want to keep business flying?
Nothing at ticketing.
Nothing at the gate.
Got a 20 on your missing passenger.
Let me guess. Food court.
Roger that.
When you want the largest push-to-talk coverage area in the nation, you want Verizon. Plus, now get push-to-talk in the BlackBerry Tour smartphone. Buy one today for $99.99 after $100 mail-in rebate debit card and get the second one free. Each phone requires new 2-year activation on a voice plan with data pack $29.99 or higher. Early termination and other fees per line apply. Coverage details at VerizonWireless.com.
Few federally employed women, the National Board of Directors, and the 2010 NTP Planning Team would like to extend an invitation to FEW's 41st National Training Program. Jazz up your career in New Orleans, Louisiana, July 12th through 16th of this year. The National Training Program is used as a developmental leadership training and mentoring program. The training program will again include training tracks, which will result in focused, career-enhancing training and a better-trained employee in the following subject areas: executive leadership, project management, science and technology, administrative professional, business analysis, and human resources. They will also include a military recognition day with a forum and targeted training. The networking opportunities are endless. You will meet other government employees at all grade levels from across the nation. Come on out and learn to jazz up your career in New Orleans, July 12th through 16th. For more details or to sign up for the conference, please call 202-898-0994. That's 202-898-0994 or visit few.org. That's F-E-W.
For those dedicated to public service, meeting the growing expectations of the American people represents a challenge, but with smart project, people, and performance management, we can make the government more efficient. Hosts the Performance Institute, Federal News Radio, Federal Managers Association, GovLoop, IBM, and Young Government Leaders present the 11th Annual Government Performance Summit, May 10th through 12th at the Crystal City Hilton. Learn how leadership, measurement, and a motivated workforce drive results. Register today at governmentperformance.org.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It is the Federal News Countdown this week, counting down the three most important stories in the federal world as chosen by John Palguta of the Partnership for Public Service and Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council. And John Palguta, your story number two this week is headlined, Hiring Overhaul on the Way as Soon as Next Week. It's a GovExec story, and it is a story that you have heard. You said you've been in HR in the government for how long?
I'll be honest, 40 years.
40 years. So you've probably heard this story 300 or 400 times in the time that you've been in government, that hiring reform is here. It's going to happen. It will work this time, and on and on and on. If this happens, what is detailed in this story, and we have a story just like it at federalnewsradio.com, but if this happens, it will be terrific for the agencies. It will be great. There's no question about that. But come on. I mean, with all due respect to Director Barry, what are the odds?
Well, one of the things I learned in my 40 years, and one of the few advantages of having been around that long, there aren't many, but one of the few is that you get to see things in perspective a bit more. And what I also learned during my time in my 34 years in government before going to the Partnership for Public Service is that you need to learn to take some satisfaction in incremental change,
mm-hmm.
because you don't very often see major leaps forward. We've had, you know, in 1978, we had a Civil Service Reform Act, which some folks thought was a great leap forward, but you know, one of the big points in 1978 was we're going to deal with poor performers.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we still talk
yeah.
about? How do we deal with these poor performers? And here's 32 years later. So, and hiring reform. And illustrative of the fact that sometimes it takes a little bit longer than people think. This GovExec article said as early as next week. I understand now it may be the week after next.
It might get pushed. Well, okay. Well.
Perhaps the week of May 10, we're going to see a memo from the president to agency head saying, hey, we're going to make some changes here. But I have to say, I still remain, after all this time, Francis, I remain a bit of an optimist.
Good for you.
Because I think we're going to move that ball forward a little bit. It's not going to be mind-blowing, you know, a whole new way of doing business. That just isn't the nature of government or an enterprise of over 2 million civilian employees. But I think what we're likely to see is that they're going to try to put some meat behind this idea of, look, let's look at things from the applicant point of view. Somebody mm-hmm. applying for a government job, should we require every single person who applies for a job to do these long essays about their skills, knowledges, and abilities and all that? When in fact, that's mostly useful to the HR folks, if it is useful. Certainly not, it's a burden on the applicant. I don't think hiring managers spend that much time looking at that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, well, let's start the process with a resume. Now, the reason why we don't get, great leaps forward is immediately that sets off bells ringing and folks saying, just on that one issue, because that's not the only thing about hiring reform, but on that one issue, people saying, well, wait a minute, you can't make a decision on who to give the job to based on their resume.
Mm-hmm.
And, they're right. But that is not what is being suggested here. It's how do you start the process? What do you require a person to invest to put their hat in the ring?
Yeah.
And it should not – now, it could be a resume. It could be actually a little structured, fill in the blanks, name, and
– a formatted application
kind
of thing,
and answer these few questions.
Mm-hmm.
But not something – something that it takes you 20 minutes, 15 minutes, not something that takes you a couple hours to pull together.
Yeah.
And then you do, once you get that information, you do your first screen. You say, okay, well, these folks aren't even in the ballpark, so we're going to set them aside, send them a thank you very much letter. These other folks, we're going to take a closer look at. We're going to gather some more information, or we're going to ask them to do an online assessment process, depending on the type of job. There's a variety of assessment tools out there. So the notion was, let's make it easier for the applicant. Let's do better assessments by, gathering the information we need at different points in time or asking people to engage in other things.
Mm-hmm.
And it really makes so much sense. But right away, it's a change and you have folks saying, but what if?
Mm-hmm.
There could be problems here.
John said, Alan, that we shouldn't expect a home run. The good news is we don't need a home run to make a fair amount of improvement. A nice little bloop base hit in the left field would do just fine, wouldn't it?
Well, I think it'd be a start, but we've got to get a lot of batters up on the plate. We need an awful lot of singles.
Mm-hmm.
And we do need to score runs. We don't have to get them all in one shot. But look, the federal marketplace is changing for government. Their missions are expanding. The Department of Homeland Security says they have to hire 1,000 cybersecurity experts over a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Secretary Gates says he wants to hire 35,000 in the Defense Department. So if we can't get reforms that are targeted at achieving those goals, then whether we do resumes or KSAs or any other kind of solution, I think misses the need of the hiring agencies.
Mm-hmm.
We've got way too many vacancies, way too many skills gaps that need to be filled. And while I hope Director Berry is wildly successful, I fear that even the solutions that might be proposed, and I'm no expert in this by any means, may not solve the agency's problems. So in the interim, agencies are finding their own workarounds.
Mm-hmm.
They're either seeking independent authority, expedited hiring authority for acquisition workers, or skirting around the margins of the rules to get the job done because that's what they need to do.
Well, and that's good news that they're getting it done instead of just being reactive and waiting for somebody to tell them it's okay for you to go ahead and do this. So the people are coming. I guess the cavalry is coming over the hill, which I guess is the good news. John Palguta's story number 2 on the Federal News Countdown this week from GovExec. Hiring overhaul on the way as soon as next week, which appears that it will now push to the week after that. That's okay. We'll keep you updated on that at federalnewsradio.com, and we will be back to count down to the number one story of the week for Alan Shvatkin and for John Palguta next on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Everyday America depends on the FAA to ensure the safe operation of the national airspace. For more than 20 years, task engineers and specialists have supported the FAA's development of a safe and secure air traffic management system. With proven expertise in NAS systems engineering, program management, and aviation operations, TASC stands ready to support the FAA's next-gen transformation. TASC continues to be a trusted advisor partnering with the FAA today for a safer tomorrow. Visit online at TASC.com.
Have you resolved to take better care of your type 2 diabetes? Lowering blood sugar levels to a healthy range can be a beneficial step. begin today. If you have type 2 diabetes, you may want to consider volunteering for a clinical research study. Several research studies are evaluating an investigational medication to see if it's safe and can help lower blood sugar. You may qualify if you're at least 18 and take oral metformin alone or with other medications to treat your type 2 diabetes. Qualified participants will receive all study-related care and study medication at no cost and may be compensated for time and travel. Consider volunteering. Call Alternative Primary Care, 1-703-863-6616. That's 1-703-863-6616. 1-703-863-6616. Or visit newdiabetesstudy.com. That's newdiabetesstudy.com.
Newsmakers on the Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabeck and Amy Morris.
The VA has now launched 5 training centers designed to improve the training of their IT staff. Terry Cinnamon of the VA's Office of Information and Technology.
By using the virtual training centers and real training centers together, we're able to do more training, but we're also saving a lot of travel costs because people are traveling locally or traveling to a major hub area where the costs are significantly lower.
Here, the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/Daily Debrief.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We are counting down the 3 most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council and John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service. And we are up to
number 1.
The very most important news story of the week, according to Alan Shvatkin, is from Defense News. The headline is U.S. House Measure Pushes DOD to Squeeze Costs. This is the Improve Acquisition Act, Alan. We've talked about it a lot, not just on this show, but on the station as a whole. Max Kack is reporting about it at federalnewsradio.com. And just a lot here. One of the things that you and I were talking about with John during the break is the fact that this is one thing in an age where partisanship is very prominent on Capitol Hill. Congressman Rob Andrews and Congressman Mike Conaway, who was a guest on this program, did this very well. They worked very well together, according to everybody who paid attention to the Defense Acquisition Reform Panel.
You know, Francis, and I completely agree. They did, and they set out to identify a set of themes and objectives rather than, as many do, here's my solution, so let's vote on it.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of the panel's hearings and work, a lot of testimony, a lot of public testimony, a lot of meetings, they identified a legitimate set of issues and a legitimate set, I think, of solutions that might actually contribute to addressing some of the non-major weapon systems procurements that the Defense Department is engaged in. Remember, as we talked earlier, the Weapon Systems Acquisition Reform Act already enacted, focusing on that other set of procurements. What's happened is this bill has gone through the process. I mean, it was approved unanimously in the panel, bipartisan. It was approved unanimously in the Armed Services Committee. But when the bill was introduced, it was 59 pages of solutions. When it was approved by the committee, it jumped to 74 pages.
Hmm.
And when the House passed the bill 2 days ago, it's now 92 pages.
Here we go.
And so I worry that we're actually moving farther and farther away from the goals that Mr. Andrews and Mr. Conaway laid out and that the committee started with. So this bill has a long way to go in the legislative process. There'll be a lot of attention to it. We'll certainly pay some issues, but I thought that that Bill's article captured a good job of raising the goals as well as some of the ongoing challenges.
All right, here's what jumped out at this that I thought probably registered most with you, John. The measure originally aimed to improve the defense acquisition process by demanding more accountability among acquisition workers and rewarding acquisition workers who save the military money. And here's the part that I thought was pretty wild. Punishing those who don't. How can you, I mean, what's the measure going to be to decide this person should be punished And then what do you, I mean, you start blowing people out? Is that what we can expect? That is not going to do a whole lot to build confidence in people wanting to join the acquisition workforce.
It's a very good point, Francis. And it goes back to the fundamental issue with performance management systems that we've struggled with for decades, again, which is metrics and measures.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's also provisions in here to reward people who are doing great stuff.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's against that idea, especially the people themselves.
Yeah, but even there, you've got, okay, well, how do we know when somebody's done something above and beyond that deserves special recognition? And you've got peers who would be potentially quick to say, wait a minute, I'm doing every bit as much. Why do they get a bonus or what have you?
Mm-hmm.
But it works on both ends of that that spectrum. If you're going to take some, especially any kind of disciplinary action against somebody because they didn't do enough, you know, what's your measure? What's your metric? How do you operationalize that? And we have a long history of things falling apart because we weren't very good at figuring out, you know, how to measure what to hold somebody accountable for. One might even suggest that some of the issues around the National Security Personnel System being dismantled had to do with, on their pay for performance approach,
right,
people not having faith that the measures and metrics to reward were good enough.
I mean, that's what I read between those lines, rewarding acquisition workers, it's on and on. The three dirty words, pay for performance, is what I saw in between those lines.
It's a great concept. I mean, nothing wrong with that. But, man, you gotta do something about those measures and metrics.
Yeah.
And yet we need to value the contributions. It is a specialty act, the acquisition skills are as much a specialty as some medical specialties or engineering specialties, and all too often agencies treat the acquisition workforce as, oh, those guys in contracting.
Mm-hmm.
It is far more more than just contracting and far more sophisticated. There are a number of other solutions that others have raised. I think here again, like we were talking earlier about John's, we've got to stop talking about it and start seeing action around it. And so if this motivates action in the near term, I'd be all for a little bit of a controversy along the way.
All right, Alan Shvatkin, your story number one this week on the Federal News Countdown from Defense News. The headline, U.S. House measure pushes DOD to squeeze costs. It deals with the Improve Acquisition Act that is now through the House and will be considered in the Senate in some form or another. And we'll, of course, keep you posted on that at federalnewsradio.com. All of our stories on the Federal News Countdown this week are posted for your perusal at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. John Palguda's number one story of the week is maybe a little bit fun and a little bit annoying, depending on how you look at it. We'll dig into that when we come back to wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose in just a moment.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
The U.S. is going to give the Pakistani government $600 million to pay for military operations they've undertaken in the last 12 months. A Pentagon spokesman says there's been some concern on the Pakistanis' part about the rate at which they're being paid for their efforts in the war on terror. The U.S. owes Pakistan about $2 billion under the Coalition Support Fund. Most of it's expected to be paid off by June. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine the number of frequent flyer miles you could earn for a flight that's nearly 30,000 miles long? Airink can. Airink supported the U.S. Air Force's C-5 aircraft modernization program by leading a test flight that flew through the Arctic cold in Alaska to the desert heat in Australia. The C-5 is 40 years old and is one of the largest aircraft in the world. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more.
Save money at HalfPriceDC.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more. This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price gift certificates to Dance Bethesda, group classes and private lessons for children and adults in ballroom, salsa, and swing. Aphrodite Skincare Clinic in McLean, offering 50% off all cosmetic services. And Madame Tussauds, more than just a wax museum. Touch, hear, experience a snapshot of history in wax. See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, exploring the challenges being faced and innovations being forged in the delivery of social and human services, with our guest, Seth Diamond, former Executive Deputy Commissioner of New York City's Family Independence Administration and the city's new Commissioner of Homeless Services. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Make your dollar go further at Nationals Park. Hit your writ on and watch future Hall of Famer Pudge Rodriguez, All-Star Ryan Zimmerman, slugger Adam Dunn, and the Nats battle the Braves Tuesday, May 4th through Thursday the 6th. T-shirt Tuesday. Be one of the first 10,000 fans. You'll get a free Natstown T-shirt presented by the Potomac Nationals. Miller Lite Party Night Thursday with $5 Miller products at the Miller Lite Scoreboard Walk. Spend less, get more. Go Nats. Visit Nationals.com or call 888-632-NAT.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Thanks for listening to the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And thanks to my panel of experts this week, John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service and Alan Shpotkin of the Professional Services Council. We are up to our last story of the week, our number one story of the week from John Palguda from the Federal Eye, and also discussed on the Daily Debrief with Krista Dorbeck and Amy Morris. But Ed O'Keefe linking up the video, and I'll have it on federalnewsradio.com later this afternoon as well. Ed O'Keefe of the Washington Post writing about this video that has generated unbelievable talk and commenting on GovLoop and on our website and all the in the blogosphere, people who follow the government. This video on Saturday Night Live about the it's a spoof called the Public Employee of the Year Awards. And before we talk about it, John, let's just hear a little bit of the attitude of what they had to
Markeisha Odom. Markeisha works at the Department of Motor Vehicles in St. Louis. Only 24 years old, Markeisha has twice been named Missouri's surliest and least cooperative state employee.
Nice work, Markeisha.
Meet Dennis Cosgrove. Dennis is a school custodian at PS 113 in Queens, New York. In 2009, Dennis set a New York City record by racking up an astonishing 3,200 hours on the job, all of it overtime. Like many New York City custodians, Dennis is a year-round resident of Florida.
Very nice, very nice.
Meet Anthony Scalise. Anthony works as a clerk in the probate court of Mercer County, New Jersey. He's also an elevator inspector for the city of Trenton. In addition, Anthony is on 100% disability from his first job in the Trenton Sanitation Department, where an accident at work left him with a crippling fear of cats.
All right, and that gives you an idea of the flavor. It goes on and on for about, it's a 7 or 8 minute clip, and we'll get it posted at federalnewsradio.com. But you can get a taste there of what the attitude of this skit is about the perception of what people are like who work in government. Not necessarily, I will say, nobody there was cited as being a federal employee. That's good, at least, right? But why did this impact you? Why did this mean something to you that you made it number one this week, John?
Well, Francis, and first of all, yeah, we all understand Saturday Night Live is in the comedy business, and you know, people laughed at this. But what bothers me, and this is not a focus on Saturday Night Live, which I actually watch, and I like a lot of their stuff. But it's a fear that maybe this is the tip of the iceberg in terms of changing public attitudes towards government workers, and even though they didn't mention any federal workers, a lot of people in the country don't make a distinction. They're all government workers.
Don't know the difference.
And we've had a long history of bashing government workers, but the last several years it actually had been getting better. People starting to realize that, gosh, you know, we've got huge problems in the country and we need our government. And we need our government workers to help to be at least part of the solution, that they are not, you know, the problem, et cetera. And that really has, you know, that sort of changed, positive attitude helps in recruiting great people to government in terms of, getting government agencies the resources, they legitimately need, to get the job done for the public. And this sort of thing worries me just a little bit because it starts reinforcing and building again those stereotypes. You know, the notion that, hey, and we saw this on USA Today. They did a series on, you know, federal employees may actually be overpaid. Flawed methodology underlying that, but it was still, it leaves an impression that people walk away. And if that impression continues to expand, you know, it starts having consequence for agencies in terms of recruiting and getting the support. And that's why it's number one for me.
Alan, there's a lot here. I will say, I have to admit, I thought it was funny. I mean, I understand the concern, and I think John's points are very valid and well made. It was kind of funny, and the motor vehicles one, I have to say, having just experienced that in Maryland. But what did this mean to you?
Well, I think we all have personal experiences. Everyone can relate, and I think that's why the skit is so successful on SNL and others. Humor, it's humorous because we can all connect with it. And I share many of John's concerns that the perceptions are becoming the realities. And all of the gains that we've been trying to make to reinforce the importance of federal service and the value contributions, the important contributions, we may be losing ground. And I worry less about it here, how it plays here in the Washington, D.C. area. The reality is for us that 85% of the work is done outside the Washington, D.C. area. 85% of the federal employment is outside. Most of the contracts work is done outside the Washington, D.C. area. And I'm fearful that clips like the SNL or others who play off on the public worker actually damages our business rather than helps it.
It strikes me that the Tea Party people of the world, they can you can look at them a lot of times and say, well, they've got their own personal agenda, and that's their personal agenda, and it's driven by a different mentality. SNL, look, a lot of people look at that as kind of a tastemaker, an opinion setter. And so I guess that's where your concern comes from, John.
Yeah. And again, you know, we were smiling here while the clip was playing. So it's not, you know, I have nothing against, satire and humor, certainly. But you just hope that there's not going to be an after effect, and that this is people walk away and they forget this was comedy, and it's like, oh, this is reality.
Yeah.
And then that's when it becomes a problem.
Excellent job this week, gentlemen. John Palguta's story number one, the Saturday Night Live video that mocks government workers, and we'll have the video even posted for you at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. John Palguta, great job for your first trip. Alan Shvatkin, excellent sophomore effort, and we're back next week with a brand new Federal News Countdown next Friday at 2. The Daily Debrief with Chris Dorabek and Amy Morris is next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Thanks for listening.